In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Strong podcast here. Strike up the band!
People seem to like Nigel Farage.
David Cameron now has a Lib Dem councillor.
Because that would obviously be dark.
Is Liz Truss secretly working for the Labour Party?
She deserves to be heard.
Gammons.
Getting weirder and weirder. Yes, it's that time again. This is How to Win an Election, your insider's guide to a huge political year. I'm Matt Jolly, joined as ever by new Labour mastermind Peter Manson, Polly McKenzie's Policy McKenzie, former director of policy for Nick Clegg and Tory Brainbox Daniel Finkelstein. If you want to get in touch, if you've got some smart questions to ask us, I've run out to be honest, email howtowin@thetimes.co.uk or you can WhatsApp us with a voice note 0333 003 2353. How are we all? We've come down from the adrenaline rush of having a live audience on Friday.
God, they were fantastic, that audience.
Yeah, I did really enjoy doing it. It was really, really nice to meet lots of people who listened, and it was very engaging, wasn't it?
It was really good fun.
But also, we had 3 days of holiday in between because of the bank holiday, and so I think...
Well, some of us didn't.
I wouldn't call that a holiday.
Some of us
no.
Chelsea, was for me.
Edge Chelsea of my seat won. Until late on Saturday evening.
Chelsea was 5-0 and 8-0 on Sunday.
I baked two cakes.
That was all happening.
One coffee cake, one German apple cake.
God, you've all achieved so much. I was going to do some gardening, but it was too wet.
Oh, I did. I pulled up all the weeds in my garden. Mm. That was quite fun. And bought an outdoor rug.
An outdoor rug.
Yeah, and then there was...
That's a sign you've really...
A little optimistic.
...to spend Monday on.
Yeah, but then there was, you know, yet another rainstorm and wind and whatever. It just... Yeah. Practically blew away.
Remember, this is your insider's guide to the huge political year ahead.
Mm. And by the way...
Yeah. Oh.
German apple cake is my favourite.
Oh, really?
Is yeah. It? In the election in 2010...
I thought you didn't eat cake.
Somebody... I'm not allowed to eat cake, as we know, and I don't eat cake... And in 2010, a wife of one of our key workers, I think an Alistair Darling aide, she used to cook these enormous square German apple cakes and bring them in. I loved them, feasted off them.
So if I cook you a German apple cake, will you love me forever?
It will make all the difference.
I mean, obviously, one of the occupations on Saturday was following the ups and downs of the counts.
It's nail-biting stuff.
Well, I just overnight on Friday, there were just an awful lot. There was an awful lot of social media activity suggesting Susan Hall would defeat Sadiq Khan, and I just could not, for the life of me, imagine how that could possibly happen. It seemed to me completely bizarre suggestion.
But also, it wasn't clear how they thought it was going to happen.
It was all done by. It seemed obvious that the tide's going out for the Tories everywhere. So swing is something that happens everywhere. The second thing is, she wasn't a strong candidate. And the third is, although Sadiq is trailing the Labour Party in London, they're something like 30 points ahead of the Conservatives. So how on earth serious journalists actually began to play with the idea that actually she might have really done it? So, I thought that was really weird.
And before a single vote had been counted.
Well, yes. I mean, unless you believe that it was all just to shift the betting markets to make some money.
I
doubt, though you could frankly have made some. The idea was because turnout had been higher in the outer London area than anticipated. And the Liberal Democrats were astonished by how many votes they got. And because we have moved from a... oh, my God. I've forgotten
PR,
the name of the voting
proportional.
System. Well, it's not. It's STV. But actually, it was alternative vote. Anyway, voting systems are boring.
No, more.
I was
more.
Told to ring the... Danny's telling me to ring the bell. Because
I'm only not in the middle, no, not in the middle of what Polly's saying.
It doesn't matter. But the hypothesis was that all of these Liberal Democrats votes would mean that nobody was possibly... That previously people would vote Lib Dem first and then Labour second. And they'd just vote Liberal Democrat with no second preference. Total nonsense. In fact, Sadiq Khan did really well.
I apologise. I gave Matt the bell not in order to ring it in the middle of your very interesting point.
You like to say something that doesn't make any difference.
Yes, I was just about to say that people who make sort of predictions in elections based on rough view of the turnout really, really don't, those reports really don't matter, don't trust them, don't believe them.
I think also,
when they sort of say it's sunny and therefore the Tories are going to win more votes or lose more votes, there's almost always, even if there are real effects there at the margin, obviously turnout matters in elections, that does matter, and you know, you look at the Brexit election, that was almost entirely a turnout phenomenon, so it can matter a lot, but these kind of sort of, you know, there's polling is brisk in my local polling area is just.
It's always brisk. It's always brisk. Right, let's park what happened over the weekend. Then let's talk about what's happening today. As we're talking on Tuesday morning, Rachel Reeves is making a speech, which is why the streets are quiet as everyone gathers around the wireless to tune in. But I'm quite interested in the language that she's used. She's literally just been speaking for the last few minutes.
The Conservatives are gaslighting the British public. They say we've turned a corner. But try telling that to the 6.4 million households across England and Wales last year who saw their rent increase or who had to remortgage. Or the 950,000 families whose mortgage deal is due to expire between now and January next year.
Now, this is one of my bugbears. This has come around before. Nobody who's not on Twitter knows what gaslighting means. What is she talking about?
Well, at least she is using the correct terminology. It's based on a Bette Davis film. We were just having a discussion before about exactly what it was her husband was trying to persuade her was or wasn't happening. But it basically persuades her she's going mad and is seeing things that aren't really happening. So what she's saying here, and she's using it correctly, is that the Tories are trying to tell people that what they can see in front of their eyes isn't actually what's happening in the data. That is actually at least, even though the word may not be in common parlance, except on Twitter, it is at least a correct use of it. I argued almost exactly this point last week in a column. The best language the Conservatives can use, because it's the only one that's even remotely believable, is turn the corner. It's interesting that she's targeted turn the corner because it's their one viable route out. And the problem with using turn the corner is people don't think that's what's happening. And so this was, whether you like that word or not, that's a pretty acute, well-researched, well-polled message.
I think it's actually, the word is in quite a lot of common parlance, particularly among young people who, of course, aren't on Twitter. They're on other things like TikTok and Instagram, Snapchat. It's part of increasing use of kind of therapy speak, because gaslighting, whilst yes, it originates from this movie, is basically an abuse tactic of particularly domestic abuse perpetrators to create a sort of false environment. And I think that it is problematic, to use another woke sort of word, but still, how extensive the use of the word is. I think so often people have different perceptions of stuff. What is, you know, one man's meat is another man's poison? No, what's the... My God, what's the... My brain is not working today. I can't remember any proverbs, but you know what I mean.
Proverbs, voting systems.
Goose for the gander. Yeah, whatever.
Loosey-goosey. One man's meat is another man's poison. Apparently that is a phrase. That is right.
Human beings are incredibly kind of like egocentric in the way we interact with the world, and our perceptions are not always correct. And it is important to reflect on how other people experience things. I think so much of this sort of therapy speak takeover rejects the idea that people might have legitimate but competing experiences of the world from us. And that is up to a point true about the economy, is that we are out of technical recession. It is true up to a point that we have turned the corner. And yet Rachel Reeves also has a point, which is it doesn't feel that different to many people. And of course, in any economy, there will be some people who are benefiting and some people who are not. You've got bucket loads of economic indicators. And it's very easy for politicians to cherry pick the good ones or the bad ones, depending on the story they're trying to tell. You always get that with crime statistics, people saying, oh, knife crime's up. Oh, but burglary's down. And you like, actually, that's not gaslighting. That's also called political campaigning.
Well, I feel well and truly gaslit. I have received a thunderbolt from my bank about my remortgaged home, and I know exactly how people feel in the country. And I mean, I just think I agree with Danny. I think it's a bit early to go on a little victory lap if you were Rishi Sunak. I think this is all part of his managing the electoral crisis that he's gone through this weekend. Trying to sort of muddle through and placate his party. I think he would be much better if he were to turn the crisis into an opportunity. You know, assert what he thinks, see off his balmy detractors in his own party, some of whom we heard from over the weekend. You know, set out some good, strong, long-term policies and try and make something of his last remaining months in office. I think what he's going to do instead, and I think what this is paving the way for, is a final throw of the dice, a sort of final fiscal fling this autumn before the election, when he's going to try and bribe everyone with more of their own money with some further modest tax cuts. That's the only rationale I can see for this.
We'll come in a minute to his legacy building, such that it is. The other thing I want to talk about is over the weekend, Labour clearly did incredibly well in the local elections and the mayoralties and all of that, but not without losing, it seems, some support to the Greens and the left. And there's a big debate about, is that good news for Keir Starmer? Because it means he's moved to the centre. This week I spoke to Momentum's co-chair, Hilary Shan, who's actually quit and left Labour. She's now sitting as an independent councillor in Worthing. And I asked her why she's walked away from Keir Starmer's Labour.
The last 6 months or so has just been gradually intolerable within the Labour Party. You know, Starmer has junked policy after policy that is required to fix the multiple crises in this country. And compounding all of that is the horrendous failings in his stance on Gaza. I think what we now need to do is to stand up for progressive voices. We need to be throwing our support behind independents, socialist Labour MPs and green progressives who can give that voice.
This is a very important development. I mean, a lot of these people are now leaving, quitting the Labour Party. They see that Starmer and his Change Labour Party and what he's about is here to stay. They can no longer attempt to overturn it. And I think it's significant also for the Green Party. The Green Party is becoming a dustbin, a bit of a repository, not only for climate activists, but for disgruntled hard leftists leaving the Labour Party and some fairly unpleasant hardline Free Palestine activists as well. They're all turning to the Greens. And I think whilst in the first instance the Greens look sort of bigger and emboldened, I think this is going to change the complexion of the Green Party, and I think they will rue the day when they threw open their doors to all these people.
And all these people saying, oh, Keir Starmer should do this and that, and from the left and the sort of Corbyn Easter wing, you're basically saying good riddance.
I'm not saying good riddance. I mean, I don't mind them staying. They're in a small minority if they want to remain as a tassel to Starmer's Labour Party. They can. I mean, we're a broad church. But the Momentum organisation is disintegrating. Most of the hard left are going. Many of them are joining the Greens. And as I say, I think that will change the nature of the Greens, and sort of good luck to them and all strength to Starmer's elbow.
Comes back to what Peter was saying on Friday, though, doesn't it? That, you know, do you want to win? And it is possible to affect politics in lots of ways without winning. You know, protest movements have a really important part to play in moving the national conversation forward. But in the end, you also sometimes need to win. And, you know, there's endless versions of this quote, but the Tony Blair version is power without principle is barren, but principle without power is futile. it's a big debate that we Liberal Democrats had back in 2010, is that, you know, the desire to go into government was sort of absolutely muted by the sense of going into partnership with a Conservative Party on all sorts of things with which we massively disagreed with them. And yet, to be in politics and not seek power is sort of an extraordinary choice to make. It would mean that you are resigning yourself to, in the end, protecting your purity over the ability to change for the voters.
I don't see it in quite that way, because I don't think it is that Keir Starmer is sort of eschewing principle in order to sort of win. It is more that these are two quite distinct principles. I mean, the principles that these people stand for are distinct from those that a mainstream Labour Party should stand for. As you know, and I've never proposed this in a sort of aggressive or trolling way, I think there is a unity between a centre-left Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats, and they would be better served in a single party. But actually, weirdly, at the same time, I think that someone like Owen Jones and quite a lot of the Gaza protesters, they probably are, and Jeremy Corbyn, probably are better off in a sort of anti-colonialist, you know, post-imperialist Leninist political party, which is what they're forming with the label of the Greens, as Peter said. They've sort of just sort of fallen into that by accident. I think eventually that will possibly be a serious problem for Labour when Labour isn't so high against the Conservatives, having, you know, 8, 9, 10% go to a separate force will become a serious nuisance. But the Liberal Democrats, by the way, could compensate for that by moving in the other direction. So I think this is a development which looked on the surface, when you see these councillors departing, as a bad thing. But actually, I think it is a symbol of him, of Keir Starmer, having made a big call and making it correctly. And I think that he shouldn't think that he'll ever get these people back by, for example, points on humanitarian aid or Gaza ceasefire, points that are made by quite a lot of mainstream Israelis and Jews as well. The Gaza protesters are not about that. It's about an entirely different view of who the Western of what our relationship should be with the Western alliance, with capitalism, with NATO, with nuclear weapons, with all non-aligned states. It's not just about Gaza.
Dan is absolutely right on that. I mean, when they talk about free Palestine, they're talking about freeing Palestine of Israel. Let's be absolutely clear about that.
Absolutely.
Let's not group every single person who has protested about Gaza into that bucket. There clearly are extremists with all of the characteristics, including extremist anti-Semites, heavily involved in these protests and these movements, many of whom I absolutely wouldn't want to have anything to do with. But there are also people who are not anti-Semitic, who are simply motivated by care for Gaza.
I didn't use the word anti-Semitic, and I'm not suggesting that.
We'll have to move on. We do have to issue a correction, unfortunately. Danny, you've been gaslighting Britain. It was apparently Ingrid Bergman, not Betty Davis, in the film Gaslight.
Are you absolutely sure of that? Because I don't think that's correct. I think
I am looking at the details of the film Gaslight from 1944, starring Ingrid Bergman.
Oh.
Apparently there was a play before. Maybe she was in that. No, but let's not get bogged down in that. But
that's bad. I do apologise to listeners. I think I may have been gaslighting people about... I think I was just gaslighting you about who's starring Gaslight.
Entirely hypothetically, how do you build a legacy if, for instance, you feel like you might not be in power for much longer? We'll do that next on How to Win an Election.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now, I want to talk today about, and Peter, you were just touching on it a minute ago, about what Rishi Sunak should do now and how do you secure a legacy. When he was asked about his proudest achievement in a radio interview recently, he talked about the England cricket team coming to number 10 and changing toilets for disabled children. Important issues, but in terms of a prime ministerial legacy, should he have a better answer to that question? Is there an opportunity for him to secure some sort of legacy? So he's not just the guy who just sat there for a bit after Liz Truss.
Well, he's contributing to his legacy, talking about support for people suffering from mental health in order to get people back into the workforce, which is a huge challenge. We've lost a colossal number of people from our workforce, young, middle-aged and old alike, and we don't have enough people working in our economy. That's what I think he should concentrate on. He should concentrate on doing the sensible, responsible things by the country. And what people, you should take a leaf out of John Major and Ken Clark's book from 1997, when they continued governing in a responsible way right up until the end. If you remember Ken Clark's budget, which we've discussed before, he wasn't going on some sort of ridiculous sort of fiscal extravaganza in order to win votes and bribe people. He decided he would do the right thing right until the end. Now, it didn't win the election for the Conservatives, obviously, but it certainly made people feel better about the Conservatives and certainly the Conservative government for years afterwards. And that's what I think Sunak should do. He should stop listening to his brilliant campaign director, Isaac Levido, with all his sort of punchy Australian experience, and follow his own instincts and do what he thinks as Prime Minister is right for the country.
Well, I think in general that is exactly what he is doing. I mean, not all of it is working out, and some people think, you know, don't agree with certain things. Let's take, for example, this week where Alex Chalke, the Justice Secretary, is taking through legislation on indefinite prosecutions, people who've been in jail indefinitely due to something that David Blunkett brought in, which I think everyone agreed in 2012 was understandable, but as it turned out, disastrous criminal measure. And it's a liberal criminal reform that almost nobody notices. And there are lots of things that go on like that all the time in government. Another thing that he's done, obviously, is the smoking legislation, which will have importance for years in terms of public health. And he's, after a full start, appointed broadly a very moderate and pretty competent cabinet. These things are no longer enough because the Conservative Party has gone through the point where people are just not listening anymore for understandable reasons. They're no longer enough electorally. It is not true that Isaac Levido is telling Rishi Sunak to have a sort of splashy campaign, and that he's jumping up every day with irresponsible proposals. That's just, you know, unfortunately, the situation is sort of almost worse than that, right? which is that he's moved on to a strategy which he didn't alight on originally, and which I think required drawing a line with Liz Truss and Boris Johnson in the way that we've discussed before. He's moved on to us as a strategy that just, I think, is too late, and it will not work. But it isn't you know, wholly wrong.
Okay, so Danny, you think that? Sorry, just to come in, you think that Isaac Levido is saying, "Don't go for another budget. Don't go for another fiscal event. Don't go for another tax cut."
No, that's a different. Try and, that's a different
but that's
thing.
The point I'm making. It isn't a different thing. That's the sort of irresponsible stuff.
Well, they don't believe it to be irresponsible. That's the point.
That, you know, they know full well what they're doing, and when they're not doing that, they're just jumping around from one attack line to use against the Labour Party after another. I think he should present himself in a completely different way as Prime Minister, and I think he'd earn a lot of brownie points from it.
No, so that's a different point. I think we both agree that the presentation of the story has been wrong. So we both agree that he should definitely have, after he took office, he should have drawn a sharp line, and he should have concentrated on stability. That veering off at the conference towards, you know, I'm the change was ridiculous and it couldn't work. There's obviously been a lot of people in the Conservative Party urging him to campaign primarily on, you know, woke, for example. But actually, I think after that mistake, he hasn't doubled up on that. The strategy on the economy that Jeremy Hunt has pursued has been in fact broadly responsible and it sets a direction that he does think is sustainable and wishes to go down. It's not just a purely electoral thing.
You're just making noises, Paul.
I'm trying to interrupt without interrupting, but challenging with these guys. I think what's missing is actually seriously thinking about what can you embed in terms of policy change that will outlast you. Danny's right that, you know, that lots of sensible things are happening in government. There's a towns fund that's broadly sensible. There's absolutely the changes on indefinite sentences. But if you contrast, I talked about this on Friday, some of what Labour did in terms of the Equality Act, the Child Poverty Act and the Climate Change Act, which were really embedding a legislative framework that would outlast them, and in fact absolutely has proved almost impossible politically for the Conservatives to unpick. And in fact has been part of what made the Conservatives go mad after the last 14 years. But there's also a lack of courage to reach out to the most difficult, controversial, cross-party agendas. And that's partly because reaching out to the Labour Party to try and secure change on something like, I don't know, social care would be seen as too difficult for the people he most wants to appease and needs to manage, which is the more kind of aggravated right-wing sort of parts of his party. And I would contrast what, again, the Labour government did towards the tail end of its time, which was embedding auto-enrolment for pensions, which they were only able to do because of expert advice, really extensive public consultation, and really extensive cross-party work. And I would suggest that actually auto-enrolment for pensions, which has massively increased the amount of pension saving, including and especially amongst lower income workers, is also part of David Cameron's legacy, because all of those times during 2010 to 15 that he desperately wanted to unpick it in favour of sort of red tape, he was unable to do so because he had made those commitments to Labour as part of a cross-party reform that we would do this. The kind of change that only works if it can last a decade, multiple decades, feels like so much of what the Conservatives have been missing, especially since 2015, is any ambition about that kind of long-lasting reform, which you have to secure on a cross-party basis. Yeah. And it's partly because each of the prime ministers they've had since 2015 has been so focused on not even unpicking the Labour Party's legacy, but the legacy of the previous Conservative prime minister.
I think that Polly's absolutely right. It's sort of high-minded and right for the country and whatever, and I certainly don't want to trivialise this discussion. But perhaps Rishi Sunak should draw down the memorandum that was written for Tony Blair in 2006. Its principal author was the indefatigable Benjamin Wegg Prosser, at that time Strategic Communications Director for Number 10, who wrote a memo called The Long Farewell. And this was basically saying, you know, you've got to leave the stage with the audience, you know, clamouring for more. So this glorious farewell that was going to stretch on for about a year, or certainly 9 months, was about Tony going on Songs of Praise, Tony going on Blue Peter, Tony Blair being pictured in front of every sort of iconic new build.
He came to Plymouth and gave a speech on a warship.
Exactly that. Unfortunately, this memo was leaked to the Times. In 2006, there was some sort of young whippersnapper journalist. I can't remember his name. He's somebody on some rival podcast now, Sam. Somebody, I can't remember.
Sam Coates. I don't know what he does now.
And this was slightly embarrassing, not least because this memo only went to five people, and we know, by the way, who linked it. And I hope he's listening. But it was a great success. It was a
Tony leak it.
It was Tony does listen. That's true. Okay. And it was a glorious farewell. And although Sunak doesn't have as long to fit in this sort of glorious farewell as Tony did, I think he should do a bit of that.
So both of these options are right, but I don't think they're really practical. So Polly, I think you're completely correct. The right approach to this would have been. To perceive right from the beginning of Rishi Sunak's tenure, when he must have seen the likelihood was the Conservative Party wouldn't win the election, and embark on the approach that you suggest right at that point, at which point you could have done some of these longer-term things, for example, on social care, where you could have embedded a long-term approach. And with the exception of smoking, I think he hasn't done that. And we've now gone through the point where he can no longer do this. So I was really more responding on the and I think also, if you can get go while people are cheering, I also think we're not going to get that. So I don't think these two things are practical.
Are you suggesting we've passed the point of leave them wanting more?
I think that Songs of Praise are not issuing an invitation. But what I was really saying was that I don't think it's a... I think that while at one point the kind of fireworks change, immediate and irresponsible options did suggest themselves to Sunak as an option... And I think that's where his speech at the party conference might have led him. He hasn't really seen that through. And now I think that the danger of this is that it goes out with a whimper. But I think it's a much more respectable and moderate type of approach as we get close to the election.
It's interesting. Sarah's just got in touch saying, Rishi Sunak might garner some kudos by ensuring the compensation for the blood contamination victims and the wronged sub-postmasters are paid before the election. If he wins, he wins. But if he loses, any financial consequences won't be his to sort out. And he'd be doing the right thing. That's not a terrible idea, is it?
He should do both of those things.
He should do both.
The financial consequences do matter, but particularly with contaminated blood, which is, you know, billions, it is a sort of one-off hit to the exchequer. But fundamentally, he ought to be looking for those kind of legacy options.
I think eye-catching, one-off.
Too much of what they're doing is thinking about how do you transfer fiscal pain until the Labour Party's in charge and they can be blamed.
So we talked about what Rishi Sunak can do to try and secure his own legacy. Let's talk about when you've touched a little bit on the long, long, long goodbye from Tony Blair, but when you try to secure your own legacy. And it made me think about this famous clip of Gordon Brown setting out Labour's legacy heading into that 2010 election.
Then look at what we have achieved together since 1997. The winter fuel allowance, the shortest waiting times in history, crime down by a third, the creation of Sure Start, the cancer guarantee, record results in schools, more students than ever, the Disability Discrimination Act, devolution, civil partnerships, peace in Northern Ireland, the social chapter, 500,000 children out of poverty.
Peter's welling up here. I love that they started clapping before we'd even started the list.
The minimum wage.
You touched on it slightly, Polly, a second ago. Part of the problem that Rishi Sunak has got is he can't even run on the sort of comprehensive record of the Conservatives being in power for 14 years, because they've spent so long doing a thing and then undoing it and then announcing, Theresa May try to undo David Cameron, Boris Johnson try to undo Theresa May. Do you know what I mean? So they haven't got a sort of long tail of policies that they can dine out on.
No, I think the exception to that, but it's still pretty contested in the Conservative Party, is equal marriage. That actually, broadly, people feel that was a settlement of David Cameron's that they can feel proud of and connected to. Theresa May said she would end austerity, which was the sort of cornerstone of Cameron and Osborneism. And it was a sort of a point I originally came across by Rachel Wolfe, who wrote that 2019 manifesto. Because I think the Conservative Party, Danny will have deeper experience of this than I, and may tell me that I'm wrong, but just seems so locked in a conversation with itself instead of a conversation with the voters, that each of these leadership elections and all of the sort of internecine warfare that has dogged every single prime minister since 2010 has been driven by a sense that they haven't really defined what conservatism is.
Yeah, look, I think that's going to be one of the big reasons why the Conservative Party will lose their next general election. That feeling of exhaustion people have of observing Conservative internal battles on issues that concern the Conservative Party and are about the Conservative Party's future, not theirs. And I think that's absolutely, you'll put your finger on something absolutely crucial. After my Ingrid Bergman moment, I'm now really nervous about this. But I think Gordon Brown said the Disability Discrimination Act in his list. But that was passed by the Conservatives in 1995. It's one of those brilliant things about these lists. I mean, it's William Hague's legacy.
It was the Disability Discrimination Act in 1995.
Sure that Gordon Brown must have had a reason for including it.
It was replaced by the Equality Act of 2010.
Yes, but wasn't that after that speech?
No, before.
Before that speech?
No, it was towards the end of the Labour government.
But the Disability Discrimination Act that he refers to.
Yes, that was in 1995.
But it's a very interesting thing about these lists, which is that they go so fast and people are applauding, you don't actually have time to remember what's in them.
That was the real Gordon Brown trick, wasn't it?
But it also suggests that a sense of legacy is sometimes more sort of impactful in rhetorical terms than the legacy itself. But it's interesting, so some of the things that are part of your legacy, I would say that among the things that the Conservative Party can be proudest of doing in office is increasing reading rates, because together with the Liberal Democrats, actually, there was an insistence on using different ways more orthodox ways of teaching reading that worked, and they were revolutionary. And I think, actually, though some of Michael Gove's education reforms people will contest, and some, I wouldn't necessarily know whether they were right or wrong, so I'm not an expert in that area. But overall, the impact has been positive, I think. Though that also, Paul's also partly Labour's legacy, because they put some more money into the system, and some of the things that the Tories continued were also Labour's. But that, I think, would be part of the legacy. But it isn't really talked about as a huge issue. And
well, it's because half the Tory party now hate Michael Gove so much, they're not going to dine out on because they've spent so long fighting, nobody wants to, talk about
that. But Danny's right, the thing about phonics is not really contested in the Conservative Party, but equally other parts of their education agenda, like this massive increase in international students, is now one of the things they're most upset about that has happened to the country, despite the fact that it brings us billions and billions of revenue. It's a thing they're trying to actively unpick.
And do you think the Lib Dems did enough when you were in government?
We made a lot of lists. We went through the 2010 manifesto, and we sort of ticked off dozens and dozens. I mean, just more than that. There's a guy, Mark Pack, who Twitter activists will know, who's a sort of, like the ultimate Liberal Democrat campaigner.
He's the president of the Liberal Democrats.
Is he? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, this sort of, he is the Liberal Democrat, really. Yeah. Brilliant guy. But he used to make these really forensic lists of just absolutely every point that we had done. And, in the 2015 general election, we had briefing after briefing of the things that we had done. Some of that sort of stuck. I do think until recently, the assumption that it was better to raise the personal allowance in taxes rather than cut the rates, which is a more progressive way to cut income tax, even if others will say that it's not the greatest tax cut at all, it had become relatively settled. I mean, that's a real win, right, is when something becomes settled and people start to forget whose idea it was. I have checked, by the way, and there was a 2005 Disability Discrimination Act as well.
We've had another Ingrid Bergman, I'm afraid.
Which added...
That's not an Ingrid
which was the first thing to introduce a duty on public authorities and to cover public transport.
Yeah.
I think what all this discussion proves...
And you can't
I think
trust what, anything Danny says.
That what Gordon Brown's list demonstrates is that politics does make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, politicians make a difference. You know, who you vote for, what they're committed to, how they build up a body of support and consensus behind what they're doing so that it's long-lasting. All these things make a huge difference to people's lives. And one of those things, Polly is right, David Cameron's support for marriage equality, which built on Labour civil partnerships, just remember that that did not get the majority support of Conservative MPs. That's how courageous it was. And it's brought a lot of people, myself included, a lot of pleasure. I'm a much happier person now that I'm married. But I'd make a broader point, and that is this, that you don't have a legacy unless you have a project. And a project is a set of ideas and policies that are designed to really change and improve the country in a lasting way. I think that's what the New Labour project was about. And in many respects, it has endured. In others, it hasn't. It was about creating a modern, and it was a very modernising project, essentially. It was about creating a modern market-based global open economy. It was about creating modernised public services, not just in health and education, but more consumer-focused. It was about, by the way, Britain mattering in the world and leading in Europe. Unfortunately, that sort of fell apart. And it was also about creating a country where there's tolerance and mutual respect. People lived at ease with each other in a more united country. Now, I think a lot of that has endured as a project. I haven't seen a comparable project in the last 10 years. I think that what David Cameron and the coalition did, many of which were very good things, I'm afraid that the legacy of David Cameron is inevitably going to be a mixture of austerity and Brexit, primarily Brexit, which just about eclipses everything else. Since then, you saw a sort of Boris Johnson project where he was flying an aeroplane, one of whose wings was a sort of pro-Brexit nationalism and the other wing was a high-spending sort of Johnsonian socialism. Both those wings have been shot off since.
I would say austerity is part of Cameron's legacy. I still argue it was essential. So that's an the reason I raise that is not to relitigate that, but just because sometimes people have bits of their legacy which aren't just purely good. People argue over them, and people would argue with me over that.
And on his terms, he probably doesn't mind that being his legacy because that's what he wanted to
no,
do.
No, I'm quite proud of having supported it.
The Big Society.
Which had a silly name, but was in fact quite a good idea.
But the one thing we have learned today is that Ingrid Bergman passed the Disability Discrimination Act of 2005. And that is really important. Thank you so much for all of that. If you want to get in touch with us, email howtowinatthetimes.co.uk. You can WhatsApp 033 003 2353. That was How to Win an Election.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.